Welcome to the ECE Quality Ireland podcast. I'm Paula Walsh.
And I'm Celine Gavran. And today we don't have a guest, but we have an in-house expert. And Paula is going to take us through her PhD research, which is all about STEAM in the early years classroom, in the early years sector. So this is something that Paula's an expert on and that I'm learning as we go. And Paula just said to me, before we started recording, should you do STEAM all the time in your classroom? I see it in all your pictures. And I kind of went, oh, do I? Because I think, Paula, correct me if I'm wrong, that it's possibly something that's going on in all classrooms, but we don't recognize what it is. So can you take us through that STEAM, STEAM? What are we talking about?
Okay, well, firstly, I suppose to start off, the majority of people are probably familiar with the term STEM. So that sort of that relates to science, technology, engineering and maths. And that's going back maybe to the early 2000s.
Yeah.
So STEAM really is the next evolution of that, where the arts is now incorporated as part of STEAM. So STEAM is an approach really to learning. It's not something else to do. It's not like, oh, well, now we have to do STEAM time. It's sort of an approach to everything that we do. And what I find, I've been delivering a lot of workshops to educators around the country recently as part of my PhD. And what I'm finding in my research is that a lot of people, as you sort of mentioned there, as I get to talk about it and as I show them examples, they're like, oh, we're actually doing this already.
Yeah.
And that's important because a big barrier to incorporating STEAM is that educators sort of feel, well, we don't know what it is. We don't know enough about it. I'm not confident. I'm not an expert. Or they're worried about the technology. So they think, well, we just won't do that, or we don't do that. But basically, when children are learning in a hands-on way, they're experimenting with things, loose parts, just trying things, you know, that exploring and thinking element of the ASTER framework, you know, just engaging with the world around them, you know, pushing that. What does that do? You know, it's just exploring really and, you know, finding out how the world works. But STEAM, I suppose, and bringing STEAM into the early childhood environment, it's really about recognizing where it is and what we're doing already, you know, in Play-Doh. If the children are making the Play-Doh, that's science, it's experiment. And it's also creative because they're, you know, they might be making a work of art or a piece of, you know, a sculpture or a picture or shapes or whatever, or learning about their colors. So it's recognizing, first of all, that it's there and we're doing it, and then saying, okay, well, how can I learn a little bit more about this so that I can maybe extend it based on what the children are doing, based on what their interests, and put a bit more intentionality behind bringing STEAM into the classroom.
Okay, so have we moved in a world from STEM to STEAM, do you think, or are there two camps?
No, they are not two different things. STEAM is just the newer acronym and the newer terminology. So it's like the evolution of STEM. So if we go back again, so I mean, where STEM came from is that it was a scientist in the US, and who first coined the term, and she sort of recognized that, well, do you know what? If you are applying engineering, say you go to college to be an engineer, okay? Yeah. You don't just exist in a bubble of engineering and only learn about engineering and nothing else, okay? To be an engineer, you are going to have to learn a little bit about maths.
Yeah.
You're going to have to learn a bit about creativity and being able to draw and, you know, maybe make 3D, you know, printed objects, make things aesthetically pleasing and design them. So when you are practically applying the knowledge from any one of the STEAM areas in the real world to make something or create something or do a job or innovate or invent or whatever, you're not existing in a bubble of that one domain, like engineering by itself. You're drawing upon knowledge and information from some of the other areas of STEAM. And that's where the whole STEM and now STEAM came from. It was the realization of, and putting a name on it, that actually, even to be, you know, a scientist, I don't exist in just a bubble of science. You know, I need to be able to measure out appropriate amounts of chemicals, for example. So therefore I'm bringing in maybe maths. So it's more than just science by itself. So the word that's used, I suppose, to describe that is transdisciplinary. So to do something in one area, you're drawing from across other areas to be able to actually practically carry out that role. And then the arts, it's funny because when you look at, there's a lot of literature out there that still talks about STEM, unfortunately. Yeah. But if you look at them, they have the role of the arts actually very prominent. But STEAM is just the newer terminology that's still, I suppose, people are getting used to. But even when people adopt STEM and stick with STEM, when they're talking about it or writing about it, or when you read about how to bring STEM into an environment, the arts is always there. So, I mean, for me, you can't talk about STEM without meaning STEAM. So therefore, you know, STEAM is the way to go with that acronym. Because, you know, like even for example, some of our government policy here in Ireland, it talks about STEM and the arts. And when you read some of that policy, some of those policy documents, their rationale for that, choosing that term, is because there was a concern that maybe some people in the arts might have thought that having the arts there was undermining the arts as an area of value on its own. But I would really strongly argue against that, because I gave you the example a minute ago of like an engineer drawn upon maths and arts, right, to carry out their role. And, you know, where that concern about STEM plus the arts came from was that, okay, well, are the arts then just like a conduit, you know, for people, or something that people use to express, you know, engineering concepts on paper or whatever. But I think also, if you are somebody who works in the arts, you don't exist in a bubble either. You can't be a sculptor without having an understanding of maths, of dimension, of 2D, 3D, of shape, of ratio, of the biology of the human form and the science of the natural world. So, you know, you can't be a painter without having an understanding of depth perception, of translating something from 3D to 2D. Again, of having an understanding of measurement, of scale, of and of the natural world, you know, and representing that realistically. So to be an artist and someone in the creative arts, you also have to draw upon knowledge from the other STEM areas. So I actually think by putting the arts separate, you're doing a disservice to the arts because you're othering it, as opposed to saying, actually, you know what, it's just as important to partner in this approach, this educational approach. You know, likewise, I often use the example in the workshops I was giving, you know, if you watch Strictly Come Dancing and they're throwing their partner up in the air and catching them and swinging them around, they have to have scientific knowledge. They have to have mathematical knowledge of spatial awareness. They have to understand gravity. They have to understand, you know, beats and timing and be able to understand what beat am I throwing and what beat am I catching, you know, or, you know, where does my body end and your body begin? As I said, spatial awareness and weight distribution. So, you know, to be someone working in the arts, you also need to draw on the other areas as well.
Totally. And as I listen to you then, I'm thinking, I was watching a program last night about, you know, doing up houses. And I was struck by the skill of the architects, you know. And so the architects, they had this really difficult build because it was going out over the ocean and they had to, you know, devise a lever system that would hold up this building, right? But then at the end of it, I said to my husband, God, they did so much more than that. I mean, it's so aesthetically pleasing the way that they've, you know, added texture and dimension. And when I'm thinking about, you know, so an architect is a great example of somebody who does the engineering bit of a building, but then also makes it very visually, artistically pleasing. And I thought to myself, as you're talking, that's exactly what the children are doing in a play-based classroom, isn't it? They are the architects of their own learning. And when you step back and you watch them, you can see the children incorporating STEAM. It's actually how they play without the adults ever having to become involved, because the children won't just decide to take out the blocks and build a bridge. It has to be a bridge that also looks nice and is visually pleasing to them and is of the right colour, as well as being structurally sound. So the children in a play-based service are actually the ones who are driving steam, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely, because they're naturally inquisitive and they want to learn about the world. And steam and bringing steam into the environment, that's what you're doing, that's what you're promoting, and that's what you're facilitating. So you're dead right. Like, our role as an educator is not to say, okay, children, we're going to do science today, or we're going to do steam. Our role, like everything, is to stand back, observe the children, and say, okay, I can see they're building a bridge here. They're engaging maybe in some there's engineering there. They're all designing their own individual bridge, so there's creativity there. You know, maybe they're getting an understanding of maths in terms of sort of numeracy and
balance,
the amount of blocks they need, the distance the bridge has to span, and things like that. And where our role is to maybe just think, okay, where can I take this? You know, maybe we can bring it to the outdoors. Maybe I can we can provide materials out there to scale this up, you know, or maybe we can decide to take, you know, materials in the outdoors and build a little bridge over. Maybe we have there's a puddle there. Maybe it's been raining, you know, and we can learn about the rain and we can learn about puddles and the science there. And then we can learn about, okay, if we need to get over this puddle without getting wet, then we can build a bridge, you know, and you're bringing your engineering and your design in there. And one of the most important things I think that we can do for children to promote STEAM is language, and bringing in the wording or the language, the words, the terminology, the proper terminology, like, you know, height, balance, gravity, all those words. And I mean, there's very simple words that we do bring in with children naturally, like up, down, over, across,
heavy,
heavy, light. But then, you know, thinking, okay, in relation to specific thing that they're doing, what's the specific STEAM language associated with bridges? Or if they're interested in dinosaurs, what's the specific STEAM wording I could bring in here to promote them? Prehistoric, you know, things like that. And some people do have a concern that, well, maybe those words are a bit too complicated, but every word is complicated until you know it.
Yeah.
It's like everything is complicated unless you know the first time you've heard it, you've never heard it before that. So, you know, I think we need to give them much more credit. And what I would advise, you know, and it's probably what people do naturally anyway, is that you just tag it on to something they already know. So, yeah, dinosaurs lived a long, long time ago in prehistoric times. Yeah. Now they know what prehistoric means, you know.
Yeah.
So STEAM language is really important.
Okay.
And also looking at the resources that we have in the environment already, because there is a concern, I think, that when I've spoken to people in the past, it's like, well, we can't really afford technology.
Yeah.
You know, we can't afford robotics and we can't afford these things. You don't need to. As we just mentioned there, you know, we were talking about Play-Doh. We were talking about the blocks and making a bridge. We were talking, it's there already. So once we are providing a well-resourced early childhood environment, and then we're observing the children, and then we're providing more STEAM focused language, or we're asking lots of open-ended questions. Why do you think that fell down? You know, and then that could be an opportunity to bring in a word like gravity, you know? So open-ended questioning is also really, really important.
So then I think it's true to say, and I agree completely, that the vast majority, a well-resourced early years setting, will already have everything required, more, you know.
Pretty much.
But let's say, though, that you are a bit of a techie yourself, you know, and that you're thinking, I mean, look, we're all allergic to the concept of a phone in a school, you know, or tablets or things like that. And I don't think it's, you know, but are there, I know in secondary schools in England, they're saying, oh, we need to ban them completely. But as a secondary school teacher, I use them for teaching and learning. You know what I mean? So there will be classes where the children know that they have to bring in their phone for this lesson, because you're all going to be doing research on your phone, because we don't have tablets and we don't have laptops for all students, right? So I find them very helpful under certain circumstances. In terms of technology in the early years classroom, and I mean the techie bits, the bits you plug in, are there, you know, if you did happen to have a big budget, are there particular ones that you think, you know, might work well or could work well, or that we could use?
Well, firstly, I think the important thing is that I need to highlight to people that technology does not automatically mean devices and screens and digital, because that is something that is a real barrier and a stumbling block. People think, oh, yeah, we can bring in the science and we do experiments and we do, you know, we do floating and sinking and we paint with ice cubes and watch them, you know, melting and talk about temperature and whatever. We build with blocks and all that stuff. But then technology comes up and people immediately go, oh, no, no, I don't want to bring technology in. We don't want tablets. We don't want smartphones. They're spending enough time on screens as it is. And that is, you know, valid and absolutely true. But what my response would be that technology is not just smartphones, tablets and digital devices. You know, it, technology existed before the internet, before any of those things were invented. So we need to broaden our understanding of the term technology and think of fans, you know, think of digital weighing scales, think of a digital thermometer. Any tool that we use is like when children are digging with a spade, that's a technology. Technology is just a tool, you know, and something that we use to make something else easier, something we devised, something that humans invented. The wheel, as you said beforehand, the wheel is a technology. You know, flint spearheads in Stone Age times were a technology. When someone said, "We need to find a better way of doing this," and they used the resource they had to develop a new technology. And once you start looking at technology like that, all of a sudden we can think of lots of ways to bring technology in. It could be a light table, things like that. You know, it could be just music with speakers. So, but if in terms of the digital technologies and screen-based equipment, well, first of all, as you rightly mentioned, there can be a money barrier, financial barrier there, you know. But if you were in a position to bring in stuff like that, the most important thing that we need to consider in terms of screen-based technologies is what they're doing on it, you know, so that what if it's educational or if it's active learning or is it passive? To be honest, in my research, I'm focusing more on the broader concept of technology, because I do feel that we don't really need to be bringing that the screen-based resources into an earlier setting for the children to use. Now, yes, maybe we could use them with children to maybe research something or to, you know, if we're talking about a particular cultural celebration, maybe we could look up a short video, or if we're talking about the animals in the Arctic, maybe we could look at a short educational video. But in terms of children having free reign to use them, I don't think we need to go down that road, because there's a step before that, I think, where we need to support children to be critical thinkers, computational thinking, developing their numeracy skills, developing their confidence in terms of asking questions and coming up with ideas and testing and trying things and not being afraid to make a mistake. That whole learning, process-based learning. All of that is facilitated through STEAM activities. And I think that is more important at the moment, because if we think about where society is going in terms of AI, in terms of, you know, there's a lot of things that we can passively sit back and let our phones and technologies do for us. But we need to make sure that we are always fostering the critical thinking end of things, because say something like AI, for example, if we don't foster critical thinkers, then, you know, there's a fear of, well, are we just, will people just take what artificial intelligence throws back at them as gospel without questioning, you know? And it's those kind of skills, critical thinking, coming up with new ideas, asking questions, collaborating, working together, teamwork, you know, inventing stuff, making things, you know, all of that is really important. Because if we look at, you know, even the careers that children are going to pursue in 20 years' time, we can't say, well, we're going to need this many engineers and we're going to need this many, you know, whatever, because we don't know what we're going to need, because the world is changing so fast. So all of those other skills that STEAM learning can bring and STEAM activities can bring are what we need to foster. I don't think we need to go down the technology and screens route yet with children of that age. Because we know that they're exposed to that. So we need to be thinking, so what are they not getting?
And yeah, exactly. And there's no doubt that they are, as soon as a screen appears, it's like children turn into different people completely. Like they're just, it's fascinating to watch them, how they just become passive immediately. Do you know, we have Alexa in our schools for music and nursery rhymes, but one of the schools had, I didn't realize when I bought it, I'm not that, you know, has a tiny screen on it, right?
All right.
So when the children said, Alexa, play, I'm fascinated how she understands them. Alexa, play, you know, Frozen, right? Sure, it was bringing up, not the movie, but it was bringing up clips.
Right.
And it was, that's what they were all standing around. I said, what are they so fat? And I went, oh my God. It's the screen. So that was whipped out and we put back in just an echo. Do you know what I mean? So they ask it for the nursery rhyme or for the song and she plays it.
Yeah. And I think what we can do there though, right? So say they have the echo or the Alexa without a screen on it, you know, is to start to foster their critical thinking in terms of, you know, how is Alexa understanding us? How are we communicating with Alexa? How does Alexa know? You know, what is Alexa? So starting to get them to not just accept this as a given, but to understand what's going on behind the scenes in terms of how their world works, you know, understanding wireless technology, voice recognition, things like that, that we need to start promoting their understanding of that. So they don't just become passive, you know, we want them to be active citizens, you know? Yeah.
I never thought of that. You're so right. Here we have 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds, right, who just accept. She says, at her age, who just accepts that Alexa just knows how to do this. Yeah. Actually, we don't question, how does she know? How can she hear me? How does she understand? Where is she getting this song from? Where is it coming from? Is she going to Disney and saying, and running back, and it's only taking her 1 second? Like, where is it all? How is it happening? And yeah, that's so true, because do you know what? They are just at 3 years of age. This is their world, isn't it, Paula?
This is their world.
They were born into. I mean, I do question it. Of course I do, because I wasn't born into that world. But they are born into this world. They have no reason on this earth to question this. They have no reason. Yeah. Why would they question it? But they should.
And if they, for them to understand how the world works, we need to foster them to start thinking critically, because otherwise you'll end up with people who are like that, just taking everything for granted. And then where do you get the future, you know, change makers and the future inventors? And, you know, and for example, right, another example, money, teaching children about money, okay? Yeah. So as far as children are concerned now, you know, money is no longer a concrete thing you can hold in your hand. You know, Billy went to the shop, he had 3 coins, he bought 5 apples, and that was 1 coin of many to get. It's no longer a visual thing that you can make that very tangible connection.
Yeah.
Children see us tapping phones, watches, cards. I learned the other day that in Sweden, people can have a chip in their thumb and you can just tap the chip and that has your... Yeah,
you can play your groceries.
Yeah. So you know, that is real. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I hate that. Oh, I don't. Yeah. That.
But nevertheless, even in terms of contactless payment, you know, how do we then teach children that money is a real thing? You know, my mother used to always say, "If you can go out the back down and take some money off the money tree, you know."
Money tree. Yeah.
Yeah. So how do we teach children?
Last year, I had first year SPHE before I don't teach anymore, but before I give up. And I had to do a whole class on money with first years. 13-year-olds did not. I brought in my money. I had a 20 and a 10. I didn't have a 50. I wasn't that rich. I had a 20 and a 10 and a 5 and all of the coins. And genuinely, not all of them, but there were people in that classroom who had never seen money. They picked it up. Like it was from, as you said, prehistoric times, and they were like archaeologists on a dig. Oh my goodness, this is what it feels like. Because they all have Children's Revolut, right? And school canteens now aren't taking cash.
Yeah.
So why
So
would they have it?
therefore, right, we have to rethink our approach as educators to facilitate children to be active participants in their own world. So we need to get inside their heads. You know, for all that we might think, oh, things are moving too fast, and, you know, we can't let our unconscious biases in terms of change in the world get in the way.
Yeah, okay.
Because then we're not preparing them for the world that they inhabit. But it's thinking about, how can I do this responsibly, and how can I do this in a meaningful way? So, okay, say you have, you know, the shop area in your preschool room, okay,
yes.
And you have a cash register there.
Uh-huh.
Is there a contactless icon on it?
There's a paper.
Not the scanner for the QR code. So
yeah,
that's
one of
the
them
kind of thing
doesn't
we
have
need
it,
to think about. You know,
yeah.
do we have, are we representing how people buy things in the real world? Like that, children getting the pocket money on the Revolut card. You know, so are we replicating that interaction, that transaction? And I'm not saying take the cash out of the toy cash register, because
No.
we can use that physical cash to maybe help support children to understand how the invisible cash is actually real money you are spending. But
Yes.
nevertheless, so even if it's a matter of, you know, covering a little cardboard box with and making a pretend keypad on top with a contactless icon, then we can
Yes.
represent how they are spending money in the real world, how they're seeing adults spend money in the real world. And then we need to think about, okay, so now we're representing the real world, but where can we now take that to develop their STEAM knowledge in this area? And it could be through things like, when they're playing and we see them tapping, asking questions to help them connect the concept of money and spending, like, you know, how much money is on your Revolut card? You know, do you have enough money in your bank account for what
Yes.
you're buying? How much is that thing costing? You know, or you could then say, okay, so maybe you need change now after tapping it, and then giving them cash change, you
Cash
know, to
change.
make that link. So it's difficult, but these are the things we need to be considering. And that's where STEAM
Okay.
learning and STEAM comes into the
Okay,
environment.
so I think in the classroom then, as I'm listening to you, what I'm getting is that, you know, they're immersed in a technological world, and it's going to become better or worse depending on which way you view it. I like to think it's better, I have to be honest with you. I like technology, and I like how easy it, you know, and how quick everything is. But then our job is to make sure that they've got the underneath, the foundational knowledge to underpin, as you say, well, where is Alexa getting the music? How does she understand us? Or when we tap, where is this money coming from? How did we get it? Do you know, I used to say to my children when they'd ask me for 20 euro, you know, they're all adults now, but, you know, when they were, "Mom, can I have 20 euro?" You know, and I used to say to them, okay, and I'd tell them, "Do you know how many hours I have to work to make that 20 euro? I have to drive to Dublin and I have to do the work, and then the tax man is taking, and only after all of that." So I might have to teach that third year group, you know, and I might have to teach all those lovely 6 years, but they'd know, you know. I used to give them the knowledge of where the money came from. We need to be doing that for in our classroom, so that it's not just the money. It's nearly like the money tree, isn't it? The phone, the tapping has become the imaginary money tree that your mother used to tell you to go out and find.
Yeah, so children, and understandably, you know, a lot of children, especially children in early years, they might think that, well, the money's always going to be there. You just tap, like, just tap,
yeah,
you
just
know.
tap.
But that's where we come in. So what do we need to
Exactly.
do to
Yeah.
foster
Okay.
that understanding of, well, what is money?
Yeah.
Where does it come from? Where does it go? What happens when we tap? You know, like, I suppose decades ago, people would have come home with their pay packet. There's my money. That's how much money I have. Put that money for the over in that envelope for the electricity bill. I put that money over there in that envelope for the shopping.
Yes.
Money is basically invisible now. How do you teach people about something that they can't see, they can't touch, they can't smell? You know,
It's a difficult concept, yeah.
Yeah, and if you even think about all of the money in the world, the money in your bank account, all the money in the banks, is it even real? Like, is it real? Not really. It's all just a concept, just numbers on a screen. So it's important that we think about that from that angle. And that's where STEAM is important.
Yeah, it's even, I'm thinking about in my new school, we don't have any keys or locks. Everything is either fob or keypad.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, the kids see us do this all the time, right? Letting kids in and letting kids out. And it's down at the gate as well. But I'm thinking they need to understand how a lock works.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I'm tapping or I'm fobbing and something inside is going and it's opening or it's closing.
Mm-hmm.
What they need to understand is that there is a mechanism behind me tapping and that that's the bit that's making it work.
Yeah. So when you bring that in, you're bringing in sort of science, engineering, you're fostering. So if you were to say, you know, those busy boards, and if you were to say maybe put some locks on that or padlocks, and then so you can still use those physical resources,
yes, which we all
to support
have.
Children to understand these newer developments and newer concepts and newer inventions, and you're fostering them to understand. That's STEAM-based learning. They're
amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you're helping them to. Paula, then take us through then where is your PhD research leading you, or do you know, or you know, what do you hope your last question will be? Or do you have one?
Well, I suppose there have been some research done in this area, and I suppose previous research has sort of shown what I sort of alluded to earlier on, is that people sort of, they're aware of STEM more than STEAM. There's a hesitancy there to bring STEAM into the classroom due to competence, due to knowledge, due to maybe that understanding technology as just meaning those digital screens, and therefore there's a fear around that. Or other barriers, like thinking it's going to cost a lot of money. So what my research has been doing is, okay, last year, say I went and I spoke to educators, and you know, what came out of those surveys was, okay, well, was that educators need more knowledge around this area, so they need more training. And there's other pieces of work and pieces of research and academic writing out there to, you know, for there's stuff as well from UNESCO around the Sustainable Development Goals that also show that, and also show that early years need educators need more sort of training to foster these things too. So that move sort of brought me on to this year, and what I've been doing is I developed, then based on what educators said they need to bring more STEAM into their environment, I developed a workshop or and a training course around that. So that's this stage of the research. I've been delivering that around the country. And I suppose the idea then is to find out the impact of that on their practice.
Okay.
And to sort of then, I suppose, at the end, hopefully that it will highlight how effective training in STEAM can be to underpin that need for STEAM training to be provided to educators in early childhood education. So, but again, you know, they're fostering that even understanding of what the definition of STEAM is, you know, to break so that they understand why it's important and how they can do it with resources they already have, with the knowledge they already have, that they don't need to be experts. You know, the knowledge and the confidence thing go hand in hand, you know.
Yeah, and I'd say a lot of them probably are kind of, I don't want to use the word experts, but doing this really well, but they're not maybe recognizing what they're actually doing.
Yeah, so what I found is that when I start talking to educators, they're like, oh, no, we don't do STEAM. No, I'm not qualified. I don't know.
That's why I'm here, kind of thing.
And then when we start talk about it, they're like, okay, actually, I see where we do STEAM now. And then I try to bring it around to, okay, well, where can you go with that then? So the open-ended questioning, the extending an activity into something else. So maybe, you know, or STEAM through storytelling, you know, maybe you're reading a story like the Three Little Pigs, and what, maybe we can bring that into maybe engineering design and investigate the engineering
Great
design
one.
Process, you know.
And by having the story bag with all of the resources in it, then you can make it manual as well. Do you know what I mean?
Hands on. And then maybe, okay, well then maybe we might go out into the outside and try and build a den and build houses, or maybe we might visit a farm and investigate, you know, the science around animals and around different types of pigs, their environment, what do they eat, you know, where do they live. So you can bring it in so many different directions. You know, if you think the wolf tries to blow down the house, maybe it might, the children then, it really depends on where the children go with it and the questions they ask them.
Very
maybe
much,
they
yeah.
ask something about wind, maybe you end up going down the road of wind energy and where does that come from, you know, or why are there no wolves in Ireland anymore? You know, it depends on the age of the children, what they ask, what they're interested in, and where they want to go. And it's up to it's us then saying, okay, and thinking sort of, well, what other sort of STEAM focused things can I get out of this? Or another easy thing, as I said, and very important, is the language, bringing in the technical sort of STEAM focused language, you know, around, you know, if you're talking about wind and talking about force and talking about, you know, or maybe you might explore, you know, hurricanes and storms and different things. So yeah.
It's fascinating. And, you know, and I'm so glad at the very beginning that you said that it's not something we've to do. You know what I mean? Like, remember, ASTRA became something that, you know, people had to do, that it should be threaded throughout.
And it is already threaded throughout. People are doing it. So what I'm trying, my aim is to get educators to recognize they're doing it.
Yeah.
And just put more intentionality behind it. Have that confidence to go, actually, yeah, I am already doing it.
Yeah.
And there are easy ways I can extend it like that. If you never buy another resource and it's just, you know, through language, just to
before
open-ended questions, you know, just to, where can we go with it now and have more intentionality behind it, as opposed to, okay, Friday is STEAM day.
Oh, yeah. That's like art day. Used to be on a Friday. Do you remember? No. Yeah, dreadful nonsense. So before we wrap up then, Paula, you mentioned your workshops. Are your workshops, I know you've done them all over the place. Are there more coming on stream or are you done?
Well, the workshops at the moment are sort of part of my data collection, you know, of my research. So I'm surveying people who participate and there'll be focus groups and things. So I don't know where it's going to go at the end of the PhD. I would love to be able to, I don't know, maybe I'll be able to apply for some funding and develop more workshops. Yeah. You know, but if people are interested in, you know, they can contact me anyway, you know, and see, you know, what I can do. But
it sounds like a really nice level of CPD. Do you know what I mean? You know, the way, you know, it's important that we all keep up to date, etc. And not all CPD is worthy. Yeah.
And I do. I just finished yesterday my STEAM book. So I am publishing, well, or is being published by Baru Press.
Oh, wow.
My second book on STEAM, which
was... How do we do these podcasts all the time? And I didn't know that.
Did I not tell you that? Oops, sorry.
Did I not listen?
So it should be out hopefully for September. So Baru Press, who published the last one, publishing this one. And it's called Full Steam Ahead.
I love it.
Yeah. So that will be out soon. So keep an eye on that. And that, again, will be just lots of information around STEAM and lots of ideas, really practical ideas. Using my big thing is it must be affordable, it must be accessible. That's no point in me saying robotics is brilliant, go out and buy that robotics kit for £1,500 into your classroom.
Right.
That's, you know, we can explore robots and robotics by making a junk art robot and exploring and talking about robotics.
Yes.
You know, to me, it's very important that it's accessible and affordable and applicable to practice, that people can listen to me talking here or attend one of my workshops or maybe read some of my research or read the book that I've written and go, okay, I can see how I could implement this in my practice.
Brilliant.
That is really important to me.
So your book is out September time.
Hopefully, yeah.
Fantastic. I'll expect a copy signed.
Absolutely, yeah.
And maybe we'll talk again. You know, once it's after being released and you've done your research is a bit further on, because I think it's a very interesting topic and I think it's something that will interest educators in the classroom. So it's time for us, that's been wonderful, Paula, thank you very much. It's time for us to sign off. This has been the ECE Quality Ireland podcast and I'm Celine Govran
and I'm Paula Walsh, and you can get us anywhere you get your podcasts. So Acast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all the usual. And feel free to share with your friends and follow us. And we hope you enjoyed it.
Bye.
See you next time. Bye bye.